Hello and welcome to a bonus episode of the End Zone Podcast. I'd like to first and foremost apologize for the audio quality. We had a mic issue, I believe, that I think is fixed now, but also this room just has this weird echo to it, so it doesn't sound as great as it did back when I was recording in my other room. So we might try to get that fixed, but for right now, this could be kind of the audio. I'm working on fixing it, but apologies in advance. Yusei Kojal joins me just briefly to kind of talk a little bit about our two teams that are going to play, plus some of the news that's transpired since the last time we as a podcast talked. I'm trying to keep this podcast about 15 to 20 minutes, so let's get right to it. You said Sam Darnold has mono. This is wild. I think this is one of the wildest NFL stories. Well, that's a lie. Antonio Brown's been wilder, but this was shocking, to say the least.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it, because and it's crazy, because this is something that came out, like, what, yesterday or on Thursday, like Wednesday or Thursday morning. I was just so looking forward to that Week 2 Monday night matchup, where it was going to be Baker Mayfield versus Sam Darnold, because I know going back to the 2018 draft, there was a lot of talk about who's the number one quarterback in this class. Is it Baker? Is it Sam Darnold? Who is it? And I think that that's what a lot of people were split on. Granted, right now, I know some people are going to give Baker the upper hand. I would put them both in the same tier in the sense that I think that they still have a long way to go in terms of proving themselves. I think that by the end of the 2020 season, so next year, we get a better idea for who is the number one quarterback in the class of 2018. But overall, yeah, it just sucks to see Sam out. I hope he gets better, and hopefully we see him playing Baker Mayfield in the playoffs at some point this year.
Yeah, I think it's just kind of wild because the Jets season is pretty much over at this point. The injury, he is not only out for this week, he is out indefinitely, they said. He might miss up to 5 weeks, and I've heard, done a little bit of reading on mono. Some people, it stays with him for a year. So there is a chance that he, if things don't get better, he could miss a very extended period of time. And I don't think – I love Trevor Siemian. I think he's the best Broncos quarterback the Broncos have had since Peyton Manning is Trevor Siemian. And I think he'll do fine in New York. But I think the ceiling with him is probably 5 to 6 wins. And he'll be fine, but he's nothing – that's going to take this team to the playoffs, like maybe Sam Darnold could have. And they are just dealing with a host of injuries, including C.J. Mosley, who played one of his best ever games in the first half against Buffalo. Looked like a total difference to maker to me, you said. Looked like the best Jets defensive player since Prime Revis. And it just sucks to have the Jets already be kind of out of contention and everyone can make their mono jokes, but I'm not really a Jets fan, but I feel for Jets fans because this has just got to be – it's constant misery and it's constant something going awry, and God forbid what would happen if the Browns somehow lost Monday night. It would just be maximum sadness for both teams, and this is not the kind of timeline I want to see as an NFL fan.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're the Jets, you look at them, right? And on offense, I get they got Le'Veon Bell. They have Jameson Crowder. They got a couple nice pieces, but I look at the offense, and when you compare it to other offensive cores around the league, like what Baker's got in Cleveland, I think that it's just not as deep. And so I think if you're the Jets, right, and plus you're bringing in a new defensive coordinator, Greg Williams, but if you're the Jets and you see improvement this year on both sides of the ball, then if Sam Darnold comes back, by the way, or when he comes back and you win like 7 or 8 games, I'm satisfied with it because then that's building for the future. So right now, the Jets, yes, they have a tough season ahead of them, especially with Darnold out, because if anything, this injury is bad because it does stunt his development. But what it does do is at least now you have the Jets to look forward to as a team that's on the rise because they have some nice pieces on defense. They have Quinnen Williams. They got Leonard Williams. There's C.J. Mosley, excellent pickup in free agency. You look at the duo that they have in the secondary of Jamal Adams and Marcus May. So the Jets, I think that it's they're definitely a team to watch this year because they could sneak up on some people. But I don't put them as a surefire playoff caliber team by any means.
Mm. Yeah, it's just, I don't know. It's just a bummer that that this game, which had so much promise, is now kind of so one-sided. And I don't think there's any question that you need to kind of watch out for the Jets. Now, I want to watch out for kind of Greg Williams as well. He's kind of made news this week. He might be targeting Odell Beckham Jr., which would suck if that was actually the case. The Jets certainly had a ton of way late hits on the Bills last week. And I think that's something the NFL really seriously needs to look into is Greg Williams kind of – excuse me. Is Greg Williams kind of asking teams to target players, which would not shock me at all from Greg Williams, especially with his history. So that's another thing I think to watch closely. In that game, I have the Browns in that one still, and I would imagine you would say the same.
Yeah, you know, I've got the Browns in that game because I feel like that week one loss to Tennessee, you know, Baker had three picks. I think it's sort of a reality check for that team. But I'm not going to go ahead and say it's a blowout. I do think that the Jets are going to keep it pretty close. But if I were to give you a score prediction right now, I'd probably say the Browns, I think, would end up winning somewhere like 24-14 or 24-17. But I do have the Browns in that game just because I feel like they're a year ahead of the Jets are in terms of the experience that they have, especially on the defensive side of the ball, where I know they're breaking in Steve Wilks as new defensive coordinator, but Myles Garrett, I feel like, is finally going to take that true step this year and join guys like Khalil Mack and Von Miller, who will get and then join that top tier pass rusher.
Yeah, absolutely. The Panthers and the Buccaneers played last night. I, for one, felt a little bit vindicated because this summer suggested on Twitter that there were reports coming out of Panthers camp that Cam didn't look the same. And I did look back. Those were actual reports. People told me, oh, no, there haven't been any reports like that. Oh, Cam's fine. People are saying he's throwing the ball better than he ever has before. Well, he's clearly not fine. If he's healthy, if this is Cam Newton healthy, then Cam Newton is a bad quarterback now. People are saying it's Ron Rivera, it's the coaching staff. I don't think so. I think it's Cam Newton, and I think you've hit a wall with this guy. I don't think he can be anything more than what he is right now. And I don't know, man. I just think that Cam Newton right now is a bad starting NFL quarterback. And until I see otherwise, he's had two very bad weeks in a row and an entire bad half of last season. Until I see otherwise, you can blame it on the injury or not. He's just not a good quarterback, and I don't think you can really take the Panthers seriously with him leading them.
Yeah, you know, I was one of those people that, because I know you were replying to my tweets a couple weeks ago when we were talking with Jared Feinberg about this, who's a good friend of mine. And, you know, Jared was like, yeah, he's doing good. I was one of those people that was like, yeah, he's doing good. But after seeing him for two games, I'm sort of in the same boat as you, shifting the tide to maybe he's not 100%. I think if you're the Panthers, I mean, look, this guy's had two shoulder injuries the last couple of years. They've both been on his throwing shoulder. And so now I think what you do is you need to consider, A, shutting this guy down for the year, or B, he's just going to continue to play with it. Because let's just say he doesn't retire after this year. If he doesn't retire after 2019, like Jared suggested in his article today. What's going to end up happening is it's going to catch up to him faster than most think. I mean, the guy's, what, 30 years old? And he, I think, still has a lot. If he was healthy right now, he'd still have a lot of football left in him, but the Panthers are absolutely killing him. And I get people want to say, well, it's the offensive line, because they let all-pro guard Andrew Norwell walk in free agency last year. Ron Rivera, honestly, is a factor. But I think this Cam injury, it's not just Cam Newton. I think it's just the failure of the Panthers organization as a whole to sort of stabilize the quarterback position in terms of.
I think he's healthy. I just think he's taken a noticeable step back as a quarterback. I think he's healthy because you saw the throws that healthy Cam makes, and he made them last night, but there were just far too many throws where he completely missed guys. And even when he was healthy last year, he has always been this victim of missing throws. And he has had, if you look at it, one good season. He has had one good season his entire career where he has put it all together and looked like one of the most dangerous quarterbacks in the league. One year, and he has never been able to recapture that. And therefore, I just don't think Cam Newton's a good quarterback. I think he's a bad quarterback.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think there, like, I've watched in these last two games. I was actually watching some of the game before we jumped on to record this thing. And I will say this, like, Cam Newton, he's really lost that, like, it factor this season. I mean, I get it's only been two games. There's plenty of time for them to turn it around. But it's like, even if you look last year, I mean, 2018, they were 6-2 at one point, and Cam was looking pretty good, right?
Yeah.
So means by, you know, he didn't last year. He wasn't playing at the level that he was when he won the MVP in 2015, but he was playing very well. And then all of a sudden he gets hurt and the Panthers completely collapse. And I think that now what's happening is, if anything, last night, the Bruce Arians and the Bucks, they provided a template of how to beat the Panthers in 2019, but more specifically how you can shut Cam Newton down, because Cam had some great moments in that game last night, but you know, the offense just couldn't get anything going. And I feel like a lot of that does center a bit around Cam, since he is the quarterback there. And you hear people all the time say, yeah, well, he's one of the best quarterbacks in the game. The guy, honestly, right, looks like he's taken a step back. And I think it's just the fact that the Panthers, right, they're letting him get killed, basically. I mean, I'd say in certain ways, it's like an Andrew Luck 2.0 situation where they're like, yeah, the Panthers are like, yeah, we have a franchise quarterback. He does cover up for some of our deficiencies, but they haven't done enough to invest in necessary and underrated positions like the offensive line to ensure that their quarterback's healthy.
All right. On the other side, Jameis Winston didn't look bad in this game. Didn't change my opinion of him as a passer this game. But he had one of his better nights. Still took too many sacks, which, I mean, it's hard because we say, you know, sometimes take the hit. But also just know when to throw the ball away and not just straight up in the air like you do sometimes, Jameis. Is all I'm saying. I don't know. A lot of people talking about this game like Jameis Winston turned a real corner or something like that. I don't know. I think it's kind of Jameis being Jameis. He makes good throws every now and then. Bad quarterbacks can make good throws. I have said that this year. I'm going to stick with it. Bad quarterbacks can make good throws. He made a few good throws. Still a bad quarterback. That's where I land on Jameis Winston. Did this game drastically change your perception of Winston?
Not really, because I look at it, and first off, you got Bruce Arians there, who's a quarterback whisperer, right? Because of the guys he's worked with in the past, like Peyton Manning, Ben Roethlisberger, Carson Palmer, right? And I believe it was Arians that allowed for Carson Palmer's career to get back on track in Arizona. And I'm looking at Winston. I feel like it's going to be the same situation. I think that last night was more the Bucs defense shutting down the Panthers offense than Winston really being the one that carried them to victory. Now, I think one of the big things to consider is Winston's had Dirk Cutter's offense stuck in his head for so long. The fact now is he's learning a new language in Bruce Arians' offense. So it's going to take a couple more games for us to really get a picture of, hey, is Winston finally living up to those number one overall expectations, that first round first pick draft status, or is it just the fact that he's finally got a head coach now that's got tons of experience working with quarterbacks that's fixing him? So I think really it's a balance between, like, is Jameis finally ready to have a long career in the NFL, or is it just because Bruce Arians is fixing him up?
Yeah. I don't know. I have kind of come down on Jameis Winston, and I don't think he's that great of a quarterback. That's kind of where I stand on the matter. But, they had a good game. Shaq Barrett looked absolutely incredible in that game. Former Denver guy. He was always really good in Denver, never really got the snaps necessary. It's good to see him having success. And this Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense may be for real. They have looked very good 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah, you know, I mean, and I said this during the offseason previews, right? Just talking to people in general, and I was like, hey, you know what? Don't sleep on Tampa Bay. I think that Tampa Bay can be one team that really sneaks up on some people this year. Now, I know it's – I'm not ready to crown Tampa Bay the Kings of the South yet because we got, what, 14 more games to go. But they've looked pretty good, and I think that, you know, they don't have the offensive firepower to quite challenge teams like the Saints. But I do think they have what it takes to definitely finish at least second in this division and compete for a wild card spot. And I think that really it's going to hinge on can Jameis continue to build on what he did last night, but just build consistently week in and week out. And regarding Shaq Barrett, like, played phenomenal last night, and I just have this uncanny feeling that he's on a one-year deal in Tampa Bay. But I think it's going to end up happening where come the spring with free agency opening up in March, I think Barrett's going to get a starting – level contract from some team, and he's just going to be massively overpaid, because to me Barrett's the type of guy where it's like he's not going to be a three down pass rusher, but he is going to be a good pass rusher in those key situations. He's more of a rotational guy than he is a full-time starter guy.
Oh yeah. All right, why I brought you on, our teams play each other this week. This is not a video show, but let me throw on my Broncos hat. All right, our teams play each other this week. I am, as you know, I don't know. How would you describe me as a Broncos fan?
I mean, you're honestly like, because I have a good friend of mine, right, childhood friend. He's a big Broncos fan too, but you are honestly the most diehard Broncos fan I've ever seen, because it's like, listen, it's tough, really? You know? Yeah, like, look, it's really, look, it's super tough, right, when you have head coaches that are consistently getting the axe, but it's really John Elway who's the problem in Denver. Oh, I said that on Twitter, and I remember you retweeted it, right?
Fire John Elway, baby.
Right, yeah, we got to get that hashtag trending again, ladies and gentlemen, in 2019. If
might happen after week three. I'm gonna give him till week three, and then I'm coming after John.
But yeah, it's always hard to stick with your team, you know, when you know that the coaches and players aren't the problem, and it's more so the front office, and you know, the cherry on what really sucks about all of it, right, is the fact that front office execs like Elway can mess up. But in a lot of cases, it is these coaches that end up getting the blame for what's going on.
All right. Okay, so this game, I would describe myself as very pessimistic about the Broncos constantly and a realist. I never really get too super high on them. I have the Broncos in this game for no football reason. I think the Bears pretty much outclass the Broncos at probably every single position on the field. But I just – there is this overwhelming stat about teams that come to Denver in September. And Denver is just a different team at home in September. And there's enough history there for me to say they're not going to lose a home opener. I'm very confident they're not going to lose a home opener. Tell me why I am totally and completely wrong. Because I know I am. But I will still say they are my lock of the week, and I'd even entertain, say a sweet tea or a treat bet on this game, because I am quite confident that the Denver Broncos, even though it won't be a pretty win, are going to get some kind of a win out of this game.
I mean, so yeah, I'll tell you why you're wrong. I mean, well, one, you got a more talented team, and that's coming into play in the Bears, right? But I think the big factor here is going to be the fact that I feel like the Bears offense is going to shake off the rust that they had week one, and Trubisky's finally going to start to put it together, which I'll give my thoughts on that horrible offensive performance as it relates to this game. And I think really when you look at it, right, like Khalil Mack was in the AFC West, so he knows what it's like to play in Denver. Danny Trevathan knows, he was in Denver for a couple of years from like 2012 to 2015. He knows what it's like to play in Denver. Matt Nagy was there as an offensive coordinator when he was with the Chiefs. I think that those three guys, they know what it's like to play in Denver in September. And I think that they're going to have the Bears ready to go. And from what I've been like reading or just hearing, you know, the Bears are saying that hydration's the key. But if anything, the Broncos are not going to be the Bears' biggest opponent on Sunday. It's going to be the altitude, if I'm being honest, because I know that altitude factor really plays in to Denver in September, because when I looked at the numbers myself, I mean, since 1970, I think the Broncos are like 49-8-1 or something when playing through the first 2 weeks of the season in Denver.
All right. I would agree with that. Altitude always a big issue. I would say I'm confident that Denver's defense can finally get some pressure on Mitchell Trubisky. I thought the Bears' offensive line did not get enough flack. They were terrible against the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, you know, like, so all the people, right, that came out and, like, criticized Trubisky after the game, because I was at the watch party in Grant Park, you know?
I'm not out on Trubisky yet.
No. Let me explain to you, right? So we had people that came out after the Bears watch party in Grant Park, and me and my brother, a couple of friends, were leaving that, and you're just hearing these average fans who obviously aren't crazy diehard like us but act like they're diehard. They were all like, oh, Mitch isn't the guy, et cetera, this, that, and it's like, hey, look.
Well, he might not be.
Well, here's the thing, right? These guys were caught in the moment, and they were like, oh, Mitch isn't the guy, et cetera. He had a bad game. Look, every quarterback has off days. Every offense has bad games. I think that a lot of the criticism for Trubisky that came this past week, it came because people didn't look at the fact that Nagy called a terrible game. He abandoned the run in the second half for the most part, basically. And then you had Kyle Long and Cody White here, two of the most experienced offensive linemen on the Bears, allow a total of 13 pressures. Trubisky got sacked 5 times for 20 yards, which is really ridiculous because the Bears had one of the most underrated offensive lines last year because they only allowed, I think, like 29 or 30 sacks total in 2018. So a big step back, definitely. And then you also look at the fact that when the Bears did run the ball, so they had 15 total carries, but 4 of those carries were split, 2 between Trubisky, 2 between the Swiss Army Knife and Cordero Patterson. We all know Cordero Patterson's a guy that you use on trick plays. You don't throw Patterson back there in the backfield on a 3rd-and-1 and hand the ball off to him. I mean, and another thing that was so concerning about that game was the fact that all offseason, the reports coming out of Hallis Hall were like, oh, they got David Montgomery, Mike Davis, Tariq Cohen. Nagy's got running backs who fit his system now, but they just didn't use him. I mean, I'm confident in saying this. The Bears would have scored more than 3 points had they decided to just run the ball the entire game and not pass at all.
Yeah. I don't think you're wrong there. David Montgomery looked great when he got it, and then they never really went back to him. I would say the number one matchup that concerns me the most defensively is Denver's offensive line versus the Bears' pass rush. I would argue that the Denver receivers are good. Would you agree with that after watching 1 week? I would argue that Cortland Sutton is a good wide receiver, like a guy who can potentially be a wide receiver one. And Deshaun Hamilton had a killer drop, but played a pretty good game.
Yeah, so I think the leader of that offense, that wide receiver group right now, it's without a doubt Emmanuel Sanders, because there's been so much turnover.
Right. But I'm just saying, I would argue that actually Cortland Sutton's the leader right now, because I think he's Joe Flacco's favorite guy.
Yeah, so I really like Cortland Sutton coming out of SMU, because when you looked at his size and measurables, they were comparable to guys like A.J. Green and Julio Jones. I think he can be a guy like A.J. Green. He's never going to be Julio. But, like, Sutton's got so much going to do, and there's so much upside there to the point where if he consistently develops game in and game out and he improves, which I think he will, that he's going to be a guy that can be the future number one guy. And then you have a guy like Deshaun Hamilton. That's an excellent complement to him. So I really like what I see. I really like what I saw from the Broncos offense, or sorry, the Broncos wide receivers on Monday night. And I think that really they only lost, they were down, what, 24-9, right? And then Joe Flacco got him in the end zone for a garbage time TD. But I think if you have a quarterback that's not standing in the pocket, a mobile quarterback, let's say, right, a guy that can extend plays, that you see more development and more growth out of guys like Sutton and Hamilton, because that quarterback would be able to feed them the ball more.
Yeah, I guess so. The Broncos are kind of stuck with Joe Flacco for a while. I don't think they'd go to Drew Lock at any point this year because the coaching staff has said over and over again that he's not ready, and he's on IR right now. But it did concern me, Joe Flacco's performance. He looked good in the fourth quarter. I'll give Joe Flacco that. He looked good in the fourth quarter. But I am just a little bit concerned about what's going to happen. So why don't you give me your final score prediction for this one?
So, yeah, I think it's really going to be a defensive thought battle. I do expect the Bears offense to really get on track this week, but not correct every mistake that they made in the Green Bay game, but at least get on back on track and steer the ship in the right direction. But as always, you got Vic Fangio going against his former team, so he knows the Bears inside out. If there's anyone that I think can beat the Bears or crack the Bears this season, right, and give a legitimate game plan, as is how you shut them down on both sides of the ball, it's Vic Fangio, because he spent years building that defense up, right?
Vic Fangio.
So, I think that it's going to be
– I'm sold as a coach, by the way. I'm not sold on Vic Fangio, by the way. Like, why – here's my question for you. Why didn't that Denver pass rush work at all against Oakland? I get the quick passing game. But still, good pass rushes are able to eliminate that by the linebackers coming up and sniffing out the quick passing game.
So, yeah, that's a great question. I think that one of the things to understand, really understand, is the fact that Fangio's a big linebackers guy. The guy has coached linebackers at basically every level. And the big thing to understand about him is the fact that his schemes really take off. Like, you're going to see noticeable improvement when you have a speedy guy like a Roquan Smith or a Devin Bush that's in the middle of the defense and running from sideline to sideline, anchoring things down. That's when you're going to see this scheme really start to take off. And I remember the same thing the first year that he was here in Chicago, where – and really the first 3 years – in 2015 and 2016, right, it was the same thing basically, where Fangio didn't have – the proper linebackers needed to fit his system. Granted, they did sign Danny Trevathan in 2016, but he went down with a knee injury, which knocked him out for the year. So the point is, right, is that when Fangio had his linebackers here in Chicago, they were really the ones who helped take this scheme to the next step. Now, I know that Denver's got Von Miller and Bradley Chubb, but they still need a third guy in the middle anchoring that –
Yeah, they lack a middle linebacker. Todd Davis is actively bad. I don't know why I talked myself into Todd Davis. Maybe I just didn't do enough research on Todd Davis, but I got burned on Todd Davis because Todd Davis is actively a bad linebacker. He's slow.
Yeah, that's the thing that I'm saying is you need a linebacker that's fast and can run sideline to sideline. After Monday's game, for the record, right, like Todd Davis is more of a liability to Denver than he is an asset.
Right. I'd agree with that. All right. So you've got the final score of this one. What again, just quickly?
Defensive fought battle. I think the Bears do squeak it out, though, 17-13.
All right. I'm going to go 17-14. Denver, we will see what happens. Anyways, thank you very much for joining us, Usaid. I listened to the latest episode of NFL Brawl. It was quite a good one. Quite enjoyed it.
Yeah, you know, so we're – because, you know, I'm like the host and the numbers guy for that show, but we are working on getting a lot of different guests on over the next couple of weeks. Bridge, the voice of the show, he's actually a former NFL player, played in the played linebacker, was an agent and scout for some time, so we're able to have Dan Schunk on the show this past week. So working on getting on a lot of different guys. you know, I meant to actually reach out to you, and I'll drop this on your own pod, that we are going to try and get some Broncos guys on in the off season because the players will love the free publicity, right? So, yeah, dude. You know, yeah, Bridge told me, actually, he's like, listen, compile a list of, like, 10 guys that you want to see on, and we'll do our best to get them on at some point.
All right. Well, that'll be cool to see. I'd definitely like to come on the show sometime. I know I'm just a small-time football blogger, but I like to think that I have some insightful things to say.
Okay. Yeah, definitely. Well, you know, we're recording like every Tuesday nights or Wednesday nights. We'll figure that out. But I'll talk to Bridge, and we can hopefully have you on for like a quick, you know, 10 or 15 minute segment, because it would be cool to like get a fan's perspective, like you just talking to Bridge about football or something. So yeah, dude.
Oh, I mean, I consider myself more than just a fan.
Yeah, no, I got you, dude. But yeah, you know, right. we'll try to do. We'll do our best to get you on sometime.
Okay, man. All right. Well, thank you very much for coming on. Enjoy this bonus episode, folks. We'll see you Tuesday. Peace out. Bye-bye. Follow us on Twitter at EndZonePod. If you have any suggestions, questions, or you just want to shout out on the pod, send an email to endzonepod@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. See you next time.